This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, folks. First edition of Pod to the Futures. It's Jonathan Von Tobel, Mitch Moss alongside on a new endeavor here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Mitch, it is going to be, I think, a fun and great journey. We've been talking about this behind the scenes for a couple of months now. The brainchild was born, I think, in the early summer. We're finally getting this thing off the ground. But looking forward to what I think is going to be a unique podcast in the sense of no game-by-game breakdown. There's going to be some longevity to this. There's going to be some life to some of these episodes, and we'll record them once a week as we take a weekly look at futures in every single sport every single week.
Right, because JVT, there you go, first faux pas by me. When you look at the sports calendar, right, it never ends when you're talking about futures. Right, there's always going to be something that you want to have your eyes on. Hell, we could start talking Masters probably in a month or so if we wanted to, right? And that's not until April. So there, as the calendar continues to evolve throughout the entire year, you're always going to have your eyeballs on something. I think it's great to start this podcast at the kind of the beginning, obviously, the football season. A couple of weeks now, we've had 2 weeks to play out in the NFL, a couple of more in college football ranks. So now that we've had our eyeballs on it, we can probably share a couple of the bets that we have in pocket as of right now, what we're considering adding. And like for those who don't have any bets right now in some of these markets, who should they be looking at as of now?
Yep. So business stuff, like, rate, review, subscribe. We appreciate it. We want to get this off the ground. We want to get it strong. So that'll be great. We're going to have a lot of great content. We have a lot of great ideas for benchmarks, things that we're going to be doing pretty regularly. For anybody who wants to get in touch with us, at Mitch Moss Radio. That's still your Twitter handle, right?
It is.
Okay. Well, you're a TV star, so I figured you'd change it for some reason.
I've changed the handle going back probably 3 or 4 times, and once you change it, it's too confusing for people. Yes. So
that's why mine's simple, at me, JVT. Just go ahead, fire it off. If you've got futures bets, anything you want us to think about, talk about next episode. I'm in the process of setting up a Google voicemail, so we'll have some callers as well, which I think will be a lot of fun. So we want this to be interactive as much as we want it to be a fun journey. So let's start right off the bat because we want to get these things in, get them out. You mentioned it. So since it's our first episode, we should probably list off futures that we do have only because it will shape the way that we attack some of these markets as we move forward in the National Football League. So I'll give you the floor. As you have your NFL portfolio set up and through the first 2 weeks, what do you have? And I'll follow it up with, once you get through them, Mitch, what are the ones that you feel the best about?
Okay, so I'll begin in the MVP market for the NFL, a market that, going back over the years, JVT, I've made my case. Like, look, I think I'm pretty good at pinpointing the running back and or the wide receiver who is on the precipice of having a career year or a breakout year. And so I've made my case before. I had Jonathan Taylor a couple years ago, 500-1 to win the MVP. In December, when Indy went to Buffalo and killed them, he had 4 touchdowns and people on the broadcast and national media screaming, Jonathan Taylor's the MVP of the league. He didn't win. I think it may have been that same year, Cooper Kupp, right? Phenomenal season for the Rams. Had him 500-1 as well. If he's not going to win it that year as a wide receiver, maybe a wide receiver will never win it. I had Derrick Henry when he had 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns at 500-1, right? Making my case, this guy's got to be in the mix. Those position players really don't have a chance to win the MVP. This is a quarterback award. It's been like that now for a long, long time. So I was able to capitalize on that because when those guys were in the mix, it came down to like, they were there along with a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Okay, Rodgers plus money right now, plus 150. I need to fire on him to try to capitalize on those bets that I have. That's not always going to be the case, nor is it going to be easy to do, though. So I acted this way with the MVP market, listening to people out there make the case for Travis Hunter before the season started. I dabbled on him, small bet at 200-1. That's a total long shot, obviously, not off to a great start there. But if he was going to come into the league and play, and we saw him play much more on defense last week, but play both sides of the ball and kind of get a ton of targets as a guy they selected number 2 overall in the draft, who should, you know, be a heavily used wide receiver. Why not? Because the league has really never seen this before. But a more serious bet that I have during the Chiefs game, watching the Chargers play like they did when they were in Brazil in that opening Friday night game, week 1, I took Herbert 25-1. I feel pretty good about that one. And I would say right now, he's got to be right there and has a chance to, I think, be there with Lamar and Josh Allen at the end of the season. And look, you can bet Jordan Love 7-1 all you want. No, thank you. That's a hard pass for me. Guy's good. He's off to a nice start. But and if he wins, I'm fine with that. But I think Herbert has a nice path this year, and they are off again. I love how they're opening up for him. And Johnson now at wide receiver, obviously very good. Who do you have in that market?
I have zilch, nothing in MVP.
It's not a great market to bet into, really.
No, and that was my thought. You mentioned it. It was just, and it is the allure of futures at times, which we'll find out as this podcast gets off the ground and we talk more about it, are those big ones. You know, like I know you've got like Ollie Gordon at 300-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, things like that, or what the allure of playing some of these futures are. Some of that's part of it, and it's just like you said, like I'm just going to sift through some of these quarterbacks, like, all right, which quarterback am I going to bet? Like, who's going to get it? And I was a little jaded from last year. I had Lamar Jackson MVP futures and thought that he should have won it over Josh Allen, so that wasn't the case. As we'll get to when we get closer to NBA season, people will find out that once I get jaded in a market, most improved, I tend to maybe back off the year next, but I don't have anything in MVP. I've got some offensive player of the year. Yeah, some comeback really player of the year that I feel good about, and an offense rookie of the year, which we'll talk about because I added it just yesterday, but nothing in MVP.
Okay, let's go to offensive player of the year then.
Yeah.
Because I took three guys before the season started. I've added one since. Who do you have in that market?
Just like everybody else, Bijan Robinson, or now it's Bijan again. Bijan Robinson, offensive player of the year, 15-1. A little upset, and I think this one's going to lose because a lot of people had this. Stormy and I the other day talked to D. Orlando Ledbetter before the Sunday night game in which they played Minnesota. And, you know, as people had noted in the first game, there was a pretty even split in that backfield in terms of carries. Yeah. And D let us know, and because he's very tapped in, he's one of the better beat writers for his respective team, said, no, like that's going to be it. Like he thinks they're going to be a 60-40 split because they want Bijan to be pretty healthy and ready to go by the time. And if they do get to the playoffs, for somebody who has offensive rookie of the year tickets or anybody out there like me, that was not really great news because I figured they were going to use this dude a ton, but he even told us, he said they don't want him to be in that like 300 touch range because they don't want him to get beat up. And that is something where I need 300 touches. I wanted 300 touches. I thought that was going to be the whole point here. And so while I have him for offensive player of the year, that does not bode well, at least learning that from D. Orlando Ledbetter the other day.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I also can see it from their viewpoint, right?
Yep.
Because they appear to be pretty good. I think this defense could be the real deal this year under a defensive head coach. They attack that side of the ball in the draft a lot, and it's working so far. So if they're going to be a playoff team, they probably want him as fresh as possible, being the best offensive weapon they have. I started the year with three guys here just to establish this, right? We'll move on from this, but this is the first ever podcast here. So people who maybe did not hear this on our weekly shows on VSiN, offensive player of the year, I started with Bucky Irving. Loved him last year. He had metrics that were right there with Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry, and he was going to be the clear number one back on Tampa Bay. I bet him 67-1, not off to a great start. Chase Brown, 200-1, that offensive line, and now Burrow being out, probably a dead ticket. I took a flyer on Ricky Pearsall, 400-1, again, very small bet. But here's the guy that I'm super excited about, and I added after week one. I pondered a bet on him before the season started. It's Puka Nacua. Mm-hmm. After week one, I bet 16-1. Most catches in the league so far, 18. He's fourth in yards, 221. That 45-yard touchdown on the ground last week against Tennessee. So he's about 11-1 now in the market. But again, for people who are listening to this or watching it thinking, well, who should I bet on right now? I want to ask you about two guys. And you're a Colts guy. Jonathan Taylor looks unbelievable so far. Mm-hmm. He looks, and he's only 26, but this is his sixth year in the league. So he looks like a guy who is clearly still in his prime. And the way that it's humming right now with Danny Dimes, they haven't punted. Jim Bob Cooter here as the new OC. Shane Steichen, offensive-minded coach. Anything there with Jonathan Taylor at 20-1 in that neighborhood for offensive player of the year?
I would say absolutely. And here's the thing that I think really changes it for you. Last 2 years combined, Jonathan Taylor, if you look at what he has done, he has had a grand total, Mitch, of 37 receptions. He's already got five through two weeks. They're using him more out of the backfield, it would seem, getting him out in space. So if they add that dynamic to what he has done already, and you talk about his freshness, like the way he looks running through contact, through two games, he's averaging over 4 yards per carry after contact. That by far is a career high so far. The dude looks healthy. He looks fresh. They're using him in a different role in which they did prior years, which seems to be a very big deal. I think the one thing that might get you potentially is, and I don't think this is going to be the biggest deal in the world, it seems that Daniel Jones is their short yardage back, especially when it gets to the goal line. Every time they've gotten inside of the one, they've called that quarterback sneak for Daniel Jones. And I wonder if that's going to affect his overall touchdown numbers, because they're not going to use Jonathan Taylor as much as they would use Daniel Jones. But I think everything else, receptions, yards, and even if he only gets like 8 to 10 touchdowns as opposed to maybe 18 he had like 2021, I think that's still going to be enough to potentially get him there. But that evolved role as a receiver out of the backfield, and he looks good when he catches him out of the backfield. Oh, he's awesome in space.
You're damn right.
I think that's something that is definitely worth considering, yes.
So here's one more. And I never thought about betting Taylor before the season started. I never did. This is a guy that I thought about betting before the season started. I didn't because of several issues. The most difficult schedule in the league and a very questionable quarterback. I'm talking about the New York Giants and their superb wide receiver Malik Nabers, who leads the league in targets after 2 weeks. He is going to be a target monster the entire year. The problem is, how much of that was a fluke against the Cowboys in week 2 from Russell Wilson? No Deron Bland in the secondary. Nabers, Wandell Robinson were running without guys within 5 yards of them, which is just like, are you guys paying attention to these two? They're covering you up the entire game. You maybe want to plan something different here. And if Ja'Marr Chase, who won the Triple Crown last year as a receiver, and they did not make the playoffs, Chase had one of the best seasons ever by a wide receiver. Not the best, but one of the best. Never won Offensive Player of the Year. But you had Saquon Barkley do what he did. And they, again, non-playoff team. If the Giants win 5-6 games, but Nabers does the Triple Crown, based in New York, you always have to factor that in. Is there any way here at 20-1 that would be worth a bet, in your opinion?
Of course. It's the final point you made. It's the New York Giants. We have to watch them on prime time on Sunday this week against the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I'm with you in that is a massive factor in looking at some of these. It's why, you know, you go back to this MVP dynamic with Aaron Judge and Bobby Witt last year and every year. That's if you're talking about that dynamic, but Aaron Judge is wearing an Angels uniform, it's completely different than what you're talking about when you're looking at him. So I would say it's absolutely a shot. I guess my rebuttal would be, is it better for you or worse for you if and when Jackson Dart takes over?
Well, I would assume that means that the game against the Cowboys was a total fluke for Russell Wilson. He doesn't play like that again. Mm-hmm. So they would need to inject somebody in there who can actually get him the ball again, and I would think that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
But he's also a rookie, so you never know. Against, again, the most difficult schedule in the entire league.
All right, so Offensive Player of the Year. So you listed off a couple that you've got. So let's rapid fire through some of these and update to what we got with some of these futures markets. I think there's a couple of things. What else do you have in terms of your portfolio so far? So we've done that. Offensive Rookie of the Year. I added something this week we can get to in a little bit, but you've got quite a few as well here.
I have probably too many at this point, so I got to be careful of adding anybody else. But the one I'm happiest about right now is Emeka Egbuka, yep, who scored on Monday Night Football for the third time this year. I kind of unloaded on him in the preseason at 50-1, based on several things. Love Mayfield. Love the fact that they're going to let him rip it the entire year. And then you had, you know, the Godwin news, McMillan on top of that. So it was going to be Mike Evans and Egbuka getting a lot of targets in theory, and he scored 3 times already. So I'm very happy with that one. This is a market, JVT, where the Titans are going to lose a lot of games this year. Cam Ward appears to be the real deal. I mean, that touchdown pass in week 2 was, oh my Lord, was that amazing.
For those who did not see it, they're in about the red zone. They're like knocking on the door. He drops back to like the 25, sprints back to the 30. I assume this is the one you're talking about right before halftime. Man. Pirouettes out, and as he's running, throws across his body to the opposite pylon and still gets it there for a touchdown.
Right on the money.
His arm talent's great. But to your point, like while he looks legit, I just don't know if they're going to be good enough. I thought they were going to be pretty plucky. That Rams game was kind of disheartening, and they didn't really have much on offense against the Broncos, where I don't think he is this imposing figure, if you will, at the top of the market, and thus you can look some other places to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, to your point.
Okay, so through 2 games, could be a struggle this year for Ashton Jeanty as well, who was the preseason short shot on the board. That offensive line is not great.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. It's absolutely awful. So I want nothing to do with him. I did not bet him. I'm not going to bet him. If he wins, good for him. I will lose then. But who else do you have your eye on? I'll tell you this. July 30th, I bet Jacory Kroski-Merritt at 700-1. Then they traded Brian Robinson.
Yeah.
The problem with the bet, it's one of the smallest bets I've ever made in my entire life.
Yeah.
I won't complain if it wins.
Yeah.
But you know, the entire time I'm going to be like, why did I not put more money on this?
Of course. But so, well, now with that dynamic with Eckler, because that was weird. The first game, all we heard about was Bill. And then that first game, Eckler gets more touches, more snaps. And you're like, what the hell's going on? But now with Eckler injured, you're obviously in a much better position with that running back backfield.
Okay. So some books this week made your guy, Tyler Warren, rookie tight end, Colts, the short shot on the board. So a lot of football to be played, obviously. A tight end has never won Offensive Rookie of the Year. My whole argument on this would be, if Brock Bowers didn't win it last year, how the hell is Tyler Warren going to win it this year? Mm-hmm. But you did bet him. Tell us why.
Yes. I mean, so last year, we should address the elephant in the room, which was Jaden Daniels was also a rookie, right? I mean, that is something where, again, I'll use the same term I used for Cam Ward. That's an imposing figure that has a lot of gravity, that is going to take those votes. He plays the position of glamour, and he's leading a team to the playoffs. Yeah, he was going to win it. Brock Bowers did get a first-place vote, though, so that's very good. But I think here, where there is no strong quarterback, where it sounds like Jackson Dart, this is part of it, where the Giants might be a little stubborn in using Russell Wilson and giving him a little bit of a longer leash. I think, by the way, that performance in week two, that extends, the slack loosens a little bit for Russell Wilson in terms of his grip on the starting job, or excuse me, in terms of the leash on it. So he's going to be there, I think, for a little bit. That cuts into Jackson Dart. The way the Colts are using him, he is, for those who haven't really seen him a ton, I would please go and watch. He's brilliant. I am amazed every time I watch him in these 2 weeks and in the preseason that he slipped as far as he did, that he was not the first tight end off the board. Out of week one, and I think he's still up there right now. I haven't checked the updated grades. He was actually the Colts' best run blocker by PFF standards. The receptions, obviously, he's got 14, I think, through two games. He's already got 140 yards. This dude is brilliant. They're using him in the backfield for different things. Now, again, I don't really agree with a ton of it. Shane Steichen tried to use him out of the shotgun on a handoff up the middle on a fourth down, but they're just using him in so many different ways. He's got that versatility, and he's on par, I think, with Bowers. I think that is something that is worth adding. He's the one I added this week, coming out of week two, at plus 450. I'm not too scared of Cam Ward right now. He's going to be there. He's going to be a sturdy, healthy presence, and he's going to be such a big reason why this team turns it around that I think that he is definitely worth adding when you're talking about plus 450 or better for him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Okay, so is he worth a bet right now at 350?
Oh, is he down to 350? I was looking I would say yes, I think so. I can, again, with the way that this Offensive Rookie of the Year race is looking, and the fact that he is establishing himself before there's any real signal caller, I would say yes. I think he's going to be inside of the top two throughout this season. The only thing that's going to knock him back in terms of like odds is, you know, if you're waiting for, once Cam Ward gets into like AFC South season, if you will, and starts taking on the Colts, the Jags, if he starts to put up some of those numbers, then it might help. But again, I don't know if that's going to, if Cam Ward is good but not great and they only win six games, will that be enough to upend a Tyler Warren who might push for 1,000 yards and, what, 8 touchdowns for a team that maybe could win the AFC South?
Okay, good. That's I like that. That's good analysis. Let me throw four guys at you here. We can go rapid fire. Jaden Reed is going to be out for a long time for the Green Bay Packers. Matthew Golden, 40-1. I can't get there with it.
Yeah, I can't either, because here's the thing is, like, the dynamic there – Jordan Love is off to a really good start. He also seems to be very good at sharing the ball. Like, there's not really any sort of like dominant presence for him to target consistently over and over again, outside of actually Tucker Kraft, who
I was going to say, this is going to be Tucker Kraft season.
Yeah. So he seems to have a really good connection with Tucker Kraft. He leads his team in targets already with 10. Next is Romeo Doubs at 9. So maybe the evolving like dynamic at wide receiver like you're talking about. But through two games, to only have 4 targets, I think at this point right now for Matthew Golden, that's something where I thought it was going to be bigger. And then the first couple of weeks, we haven't really seen it. So maybe he explodes for it. But there's just too much there, I think, for Green Bay to really love it.
How about Boot Scootin' Tootin', the rookie for the Jags? No more Tank Bigsby. They traded him off to Philadelphia. He's now going to split time with Travis Etienne, who's off to a really nice start this year. He's 55-1. He scored a touchdown in week 2.
I mean, I think that that could probably happen. That one, too, is your belief in Liam Cohen and what's going on there. I guess my rebuttal would be, do we buy some of the issues we've seen from Jacksonville? And do you trust that Trevor Lawrence is going to be able to facilitate this offense? That was a bad performance in week two. Multiple picks, one in the red zone. Is this offense going to get stuck in neutral because Lawrence is and continuing to regress to the point where he's not going to get the touches, or if he even gets the touches, if he's such a focal point and that this passing attack is so mundane that he is not going to be able to be as efficient because he's going to be one of the targets in what you're talking about in the shared backfield already?
Okay, I cut the list from 4 to 3. Last guy here. I think this dude is worth a bet if nobody has anything going right now in Offensive Rookie of the Year. We saw the timeshare tilt in his favor in week number 2. I already have a ticket out him at, I believe, 80 to 1. But what about Cam Scadaboo? Scored in week 2 against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
He's getting more snaps now, right? He's getting more carries. He's also a really good receiver. He's going to be the goal line back because he's such a battery ram. 100 to 1 now. And that's to go back to what you said about Cam Ward. Can he really win Offensive Rookie of the Year on a 6-win Tennessee Titan team? I would think not. Can Cam Scadaboo actually win the award on a 5 or 6-win Giants team? Again, going back to playing in New York, I think yes.
Yes. Oh, and I think, too, this fair or unfair, I think that if you're a skill position player, team success is not as necessary as opposed to being a quarterback. Now, with an Offensive Rookie of the Year, again, team success as a quarterback is still, I think, is lower than MVP. MVP, you got to win like 12 games. You got to do all those sort of things. For Offensive Rookie of the Year, you know, you can still be a quarterback on a mundane team as long as you're playing particularly well. And I think for skill position players, that's even more so. Where, I mean, look, we talked about Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers last year at least got a first place vote, and the Raiders won 6 games last year, something like that. Ended up finishing second. So that is something where, at the very least, team success for a dude like Scadaboo is going to be not as important, and I think not as impactful when it comes to how voters are deciding what they're going to do with him.
Well said.
Yeah. All right. There's a couple of things I want to hit here. We're talking about our futures portfolios again. Pod to the Futures. Really appreciate you checking it out. Like, rate, review, subscribe. First episode getting off the ground, so we're going to make sure that this is one that is set up for success. So we're going to do a good job of setting you up in terms of these futures markets, going over what we have. A couple of things. We've gone over a lot for you. I will say that with my futures portfolio, some of the things that I feel pretty good about, I'm going to hit that really quickly. This is one of the best bets that I've ever made that I don't think I'm going to get. Joe Mixon under 880.5 rushing yards for the season. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to take a snap. And so that's like nailed it. I was like, dude, he's not healthy. They're going to be part of this backfield share. I don't know if they're going to be particularly great, whatever it is. And then now, of course, they're I don't know if you saw the clip the other day of D'Amico Ryans talking about him in the past tense. I was like, oh boy.
Oh, that's like never this. Good. And by the way, I'll give you now one more. What if they fall out of the playoff mix?
Yep. So, and this is why I wanted
to
bring
that
up.
What's going to be the reason to bring him back?
Yep, and so this is why I wanted to bring this up, because I wanted to expand on maybe looking forward to some stuff. I know we've talked about some futures. I know you've got some division tickets and whatnot. So we watched the Buccaneers beat the Texans yesterday. Texans are now 0-2. This AFC South becomes really fascinating with how you want to attack it if you feel like going after it. I do have some stuff here already. I've got the Jags to win the AFC South at 3-1. I have a Jags-Colts 1-2 exacta at 10-1. But the reason why I want to bring this up is, am I wrong? Are we wrong? Should we be investing more? We've talked about them a couple of times for a couple of players, Jonathan Taylor and Tyler Warren. What do we make of this start for Indianapolis? And if you look at some of these division futures outside of the AFC South, is there anything else? But the AFC South in particular, when you have a favorite start 0-2, much like in the AFC West, all of a sudden now it becomes way more interesting in how you're going to play this thing as you move forward.
Yeah, like how sustainable is this for the 2025 regular season in Indianapolis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, Steichen, offensive coach, Jim Bob Cooter, off to a great start. By the way, 60-1 still, assistant coach of the year.
Yep.
Don't hate that at all. That's still available at FanDuel. Can Danny Dimes play like this for two-thirds of the season?
I think he can. I think Steichen's actually, I think he's kind of below average with game management decisions, as we saw with the Broncos game, where he played for a 60-yard field goal. Admittedly, though, I don't know if you saw his post-game presser. He admitted, said we needed to be more aggressive there. That's my fault. Like, we got away with one.
Good.
So you like, okay. you like to hear a coach say that, because you, at least it shows that he is learning from those types of situations. But I think he's a brilliant play caller. And like, folks, I know that Pat Surtain got dinged up in that game against what many have told me is the best defense in the NFL. They averaged 7 yards per play. They were great. And I don't know about how Danny Dimes is going to continue to play like this, but if he's in this system, and let us not forget, as much as criticism, and I have levied it at Shane Steichen, he had Gardner Minshew a drop pass away from the postseason. He had a mix of Joe Flacco and Anthony Richardson in control of a wild card going into Denver last year in week 15. And they were playing like their quarterback position was garbage. And if they had beat Denver in that game, and by the way, they had a lead and picked off Bo Nix 3 times in that game, all of a sudden they were going to be a wild card team. This dude's a pretty good coach. And you talk about assistant coaches that might have a shot here. You know, you brought up Jim Bob Cooter, their offensive coordinator. I don't know if Shane Steichen's going to get the credit or if Bob Cooter's going to get the credit, but I'll throw out one more for you on this staff. Dude, this Colts defense looks pretty solid through 2 weeks, yep. And their cornerback room is beat to hell. And if they continue to play like this, Lou Anarumo, shamed, kicked out of Cincinnati, it's all your fault, and their defense continues to look like crap, but this Colts defense turns things around and continues to play at an above-average level, he's like 70-1 to win assistant coach of the year. And they might be like a 9-10 win team that wins their division.
Side note, isn't that something the way it works? Lou lost his fastball in Cincy. He stinks as a DC, not making it work anymore on that side of the ball, and the talent doesn't get blamed for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Could Bill Belichick in his prime make it work with this Bengals talent on defense?
Well,
could Spagnuolo, right? What if the Chiefs had this defense?
Yep.
What are they going to win? 5 games this year?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, probably not his fault.
Yes.
He probably wasn't a genius, by the way, for when the Bengals defense was running hot for like a 2-year stretch. But, and you know, so it's somewhere in between. Really good. Not a genius, and certainly not as crappy as, you know, to get driven out of town like he did.
And we should note, too, for our audience, if you're just joining us, because we're mentioning this assistant coach of the year market. It's a relatively new one.
Yes.
It did go back and look. Every assistant coach has been part of a team that has won at least 11 games. So that seems to be an important thing. You know, like one of the things that I had thrown out there was Tanner Engstrad, offensive coordinator for the New York Jets, to win it. And he was about 60-1, and it was after week one. I don't know if that team's going to win enough games for that to happen, so it's probably not going to be a good bet to make. But Colts are a team that, would you be shocked if I told you right now they won 10 games in the AFC South? Because I after a 2-0 start, I don't think anybody would be surprised at all.
No, and you brought up the key point here. I think this Broncos defense is going to be legit. Yep. I mean, that's Captain Obvious. Hello, how you doing? Right, and by legit, I should say, you know, that's a total understatement. They're going to be one of the best in the entire league, as long as they stay healthy. That's a great sign. Like you said, 7 yards per play, never punted. First team ever, back-to-back weeks to not actually punt in the first 2 weeks of the season. And to do it against a defense like Denver is why I think, again, am I betting Danny Dimes to win the MVP? Absolutely not. But maybe they're onto something here. And maybe this was like the perfect landing spot for him.
Yep. Okay, because I know we're kind of having like a, it's a good episode. We're talking about a lot. We do want to kind of keep these in a ballpark of a time. Before we move off, because I want to get your thoughts on a couple of college football things we were talking about these last night that we wanted to hit. Anything else coming out of the NFL? Because I did have one question for you about the NFL before we moved on to college. Your boys, are they the best team in the NFC? Because the betting market would tell you yes. For those who are just joining us, yeah, your boys are the Green Bay Packers. This is the interesting dynamic because I will say I did add a future. It's not in the NFC. I know I just asked you about it. We talked about it. Added the Chargers, but was looking at the NFC as a whole and trying to figure this out. It is pretty interesting that the market has gone in the direction of no, the Green Bay Packers are the best team. Now, liability is reflected in this, so maybe they got some Green Bay Packers stuff. They want to put them at the top. But right now, every shop would tell you that the Green Bay Packers are the NFC favorite.
There's a lot of hype here, man. A lot. I get it. He's one of the best defensive players in the league, Micah Parsons.
Yep.
Do they deserve to be where they are right now because of him? I don't know.
If I could, I would say yes, but it's not just because of him. Their defense is sick. Edrin Cooper is coming around in a really strong way.
He looks really good.
Yep, he's great. He's a tackle machine. I've been betting more. This is day-to-day, but I've been betting more defensive player props, sacks, tackles. I've been trying to track those markets.
He's, good angle.
He's played every snap so far defensively. He has sailed over his individual tackle props in both of them. It was like 5.5 for each game, and he's gotten 7, I think, in each. He's been absolutely brilliant, and it's just tackles, not tackles and assists. There's a difference there. But defensively, they're good, and the reason why I asked this question is because I feel like I want to do this. I'm going to say this for everybody because I had my questions about Jordan Love, but if he continues to play like this, I say yes, they are the best team in the NFC. I don't like that second corner spot for Philly. I think it's a small problem. I think when you take on teams like Green Bay that have all these weapons, that's going to show up in a really big way. They've got a solid offensive line. I think they do deserve to be the favorite in the NFC.
All right. Let me give you a team, and we're going to find out a lot in week 3.
Okay.
I think there's a chance the Rams are.
Yeah. The back injury, I think, is if anybody's listening to this, I'm not saying anything crazy. The back injury does scare me a little bit. Like he takes one hit and all of a sudden we're talking about Jimmy G. And I just, oof.
I know that changes everything, but you can say that about every team, right? I mean, yep, if we would have started this podcast before week 2, we probably would have been, you know, singing the praises of like the potential of Joe Burrow and Chase and the Bengals. And oh, now he's going to miss 3 months and then other injuries as well. So that was one of the first bets I made in the offseason. The day that Stafford announced that he was going to come back and play again for the Rams, I popped him big 30-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Love the team. Absolutely love them. And as long, and trust me, during the offseason when that back injury was lingering, I'm like, uh-oh, it's panic time for me now. But if he could stay healthy for and play 15 games this year and be ready for the postseason, this team might have a say in the one seed overall, by the way. Because everybody talks about the 49ers schedule, how easy it is, rightfully so. The Rams schedule is not frightening. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, before we move to college, just really quick, we talked about futures that we have that we like. I have a $17-1 NFC one seed ticket from before the season started. So
see, that's another team too.
Yep.
That's another team that could be in the mix. Yep.
I think I liken them and the 49ers to, you remember some of those Titan teams that won the one seed, but like every metric was pointing to them being a pretty average team? Like, I think that might be it, where you just build up a record against a pretty soft schedule, but you're not power rated the same level as some of these others. All right, let's hit on college too, because again, we want to hit these on a weekly basis, have some even spread. College has been pretty chaotic early on. I think there's a couple of different ways to attack this. First off, national title futures are, I think, something we don't really hit on a ton, at least on the network. I don't really hear a lot of like, who are we betting to win a national title at this point of the year? I did have one suggestion after watching these first couple of weeks of this season. Right now they are I think they're still getting them at 16-1. I don't trust their head coach at all, but Mitch, how am I not looking at Miami? Their offensive line is, I think, the best in the country potentially. Carson Beck looks rejuvenated after healing up on that elbow injury, I think, that he had in the offseason. You look at the ACC as a whole, who's the second best team in the conference? Georgia Tech? I mean, at this point, the ACC looks very wide open for this team, for them to get a top seed. I am surprised that we are still getting about 16-1 on what I think is a clear-cut college football playoff team in the Miami Hurricanes.
No, I like it. They're better than last year because they have a defense. Even though Cam Ward easily could have won the Heisman Trophy. I love it when Miami is good, by the way. I'm not like a fan of the Hurricanes, but I think it's better for college football. 16-1. And by the way, to your point, probably needs to be talked about more. I think the reason why it hasn't been in the last couple of years maybe is because we don't realize that how open it could be with an expanded playoff. Because forever in college football, JBT, it was going to be like two or maybe three teams before the season started. And it would play out like that almost every single year. Like, who's the best team in the SEC? It's going to be Alabama or Georgia. Okay, well, how good is Clemson this year? And then is Ohio State like a real threat? Like, that's what it was almost every single year. And now with a playoff like this, you're going to get some potential teams in there, like Indiana last year, where you never saw it coming. Or they could have been huge odds before the season started. So I will second what you said about Cristobal as well. Phenomenal recruiter. You got to tip your cap to the way that he brings in talent, regardless of where he's coaching. He's going to do that every single year. But that's the one thing that scares me.
I can just see it.
In game.
Now, I should mention, oh, yeah. I mean, we go back to we've seen the losses, so I understand that. And I should mention, I should be fair. I mentioned, who's the second best team? Florida State is a seventh-ranked team, and they did beat the crap out of Alabama. Miami does get to, I believe they get Florida State at home, if I remember correctly. I'm going to double-check this. No, they're going to go to Florida State. So that's going to be a big decider in terms of how the ACC shakes out. So that is one we should mention, or at least I should mention, in terms of the dynamic in the ACC. But I've been very impressed with Carson Beck and Miami so far. I do have Penn State to win the national title from before the season started. That's the only thing I have. What do you got?
So let me give you this. In that same conference, and I know Zach Cohen at VSiN also bet it. He wrote about it this week at VSiN.com. I was looking for this going back in this week on like a Monday night. How about Cal just to make the ACC title game? So they're off to a great start. They're 3-0. I know you and Stormy have talked about this on Money Moves.
It's her team. She's got two games. Yeah.
So far. So look at their schedule. Let me run it down here. Tell me like where the true roadblocks are at. Now, they're road games, but they're big favorites at San Diego State. They'll have to go across the country and play at BC. They get Duke at home, North Carolina at home. They're at this hot mess called VaTech. They play Virginia at home, at Louisville, at Stanford, SMU at home. They were 17-1. That looks like that number maybe moved a little bit. But there's an angle here where that quarterback appears to be the real deal. I like Wilcox still as a coach defensively. If they can be as good as what we think they might be, 17-1 in that range just to make the ACC title game?
I would completely agree with you. The very clear and obvious roadblock is the road trip to Louisville near the end of the year.
No doubt.
This is complete hyperbole to an extent, but looking at the way the schedule, if they pull it off against Duke, because that's also one that where you, maybe you take an L there.
So would SMU at home.
Right. But what my point was, that if you bet this, let's say they pull this off against Duke, are we talking about, I mean, dare we say, an undefeated Cal team going into that road game against Louisville? I think so. I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world.
No, again, I really don't.
You'd have to pull it off against Duke, but you're talking about San Diego State. You mentioned a 12.5-point favorite. I'd quibble with how big the favorite they are against San Diego State this week, but either way, they are favored to win the game. At Boston College, a very winnable game, despite the fact it's a tough spot going all the way across the country. Right. So we'll see if that's going to be it. But you get those, and you pull the upset against Duke. You're talking about, and even then, even let's say you lose to Duke, what potentially a one-loss Cal team going into Louisville. That is a team that is going to be pretty live to make a run. And then it obviously depends on how these second best teams of the ACC, how it plays out in terms of tiebreakers.
Yeah. And this is the thing too, right? Like we're kind of setting the foundation here with this being the first podcast on a bet like this. You know, I'm okay with hedging some bets.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to hedge every time. Some of them, when I think it might be appropriate, I will. This could be one where, hey, they're in the mix. That number's down to 2-1 now just to make the ACC title game. And let's say they're, you know, it's late in the season. You could always come back and take the other side, maybe if it's a small money line bet, and go against them a little bit.
All right, to the point of the ACC, let's add one more thing. You and I were talking about this yesterday. Cal is a very plucky team. What do we make of what Georgia Tech's path now looks like to the college football playoff? Because this is, if you look at the way that their schedule breaks down, and again, we don't need to win a conference here. We don't need to do any of that. We just need to rack up wins and have a good enough resume. They pull off a win against Clemson. Their schedule moving forward, home versus Temple, at Wake Forest, home versus Virginia Tech, at Duke, Syracuse at home, at NC State, at Boston College, and then home versus Pitt. And then you wrap up, of course, with Georgia, a team that you upended last year. You talk about schedules that are opportunistic. I mean, at the very least, it would seem, considering how well-coached they are, this looks like a group that's going to be 6-0 going into a road game against Duke on October 18th.
Yeah, so the two tricky spots obviously would be that game. At NC State, they're going to be plucky for sure.
Yep.
Pittsburgh at home, I would like them, but Pittsburgh might be a little hairy there as well. Look, you got to love the coach. And by the way, when they're in underdog spots, the guy's awesome as a dog in these games. And they should have defeated Georgia in that 8 overtime game last year. And so they're plus 190 to make the playoffs.
Yep. I mean, I think it's worth it because the question becomes at Duke versus Pitt and then Georgia in Atlanta. If you lose two of those three and you are a two-loss Georgia Tech team with a win over Clemson and then your next best win is one of Duke, Pittsburgh, or Georgia.
Yeah.
Is that good enough at 10-2? To get into the college football playoff. And I would say it has to be.
I would think yes, yeah.
So that's I'm banking on if I'm adding that to my portfolio, which I'm doing, which I'm doing here. That is something where I'm just betting, man, just take one of those three. And I think you as a two loss team, if you take care of business everywhere else, is going to be a playoff team. And then we know how Clemson works, right? Clemson does not look good at this portion of the year.
Right.
They're always strong finishers. If Clemson goes out and finishes the season strong with what they have in front of them, that win only looks better. And by the way, Clemson's entering a stretch where they can do it. Syracuse, North Carolina, Boston College, home versus SMU, home versus Duke. Going into November 8th, I don't think it would be a stunner to see that they're floating on like a 4 or 5 game winning streak by the time they go take on Florida State at home.
Good call. I'll wrap on this. How about a group of five angle to look at? South Florida got blasted by Miami. That's not a good look, but you have to give them a lot of credit for their first two wins, obviously. Who's going to get that group of five bid? Memphis hosts Arkansas this week. Arkansas has been feisty, man. That's a really good offense, right? They got a really good quarterback. What if Memphis wins that game as a dog at home, which I think is a winnable game for them? Their road games in conference at Florida Atlantic, at UAB, at Rice, at East Carolina. They get South Florida at home, Tulane at home, and Navy at home. This is a team that I picked to win this conference before the season started. Yeah. They're still 7-1, maybe a little bit higher just to make the playoff.
I mean, it just kind of comes down to whether or not they beat South Florida, doesn't it? It's kind of like it seems like that's an eliminator game for the most part.
And
if they take care of their business, they pull this off against Arkansas. Because here's the thing. I think the problem is, you know, like you're talking about, what's the odds for them to make the college football playoff?
I only looked at one book, 7-1.
Okay.
Might be higher.
And then, yeah, because that's the only dynamic at play, right, is, you know, if they beat South Florida and then if they meet again in the American Championship game and then they split that, they're not going to make it, obviously, or whatever it is. They have to win the conference.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's really the dynamic is, can you sweep the season series, if you're assuming, if there's two, against South Florida, should you play them? Which I don't think is the craziest thing in the world. Like, resume to resume, I would say there's no shot. But since they play one another, I think that's the key factor, obviously.
Sure. And I'd like their chances at home anyway, and then that sweep would take care of business in.
Yep. All right, buddy. This was a good episode, along when we're getting our feet wet, trying to get established here. So again, just to establish for the audience, futures, really the premise. We're just going to be talking about these, updating them. We'll have a little bit more of an even split. We were supposed to hit a little baseball, but we're running up against it, so we'll have to save that as we get into the playoffs, which are going to be around the corner here. But good first episode. We're going to add a lot more to it, and we want to hear from you too. So please like, rate, review, subscribe. MEJVT at Mitch Moss Radio. And I don't know if there's anything else I'd like to add before we get out of here, Mitchell.
Great job, man. Awesome job hosting. Love doing it with you. Yeah, to your point, you know, we do have the NBA and the NHL plus college basketball around the corner. Cool. This is the beauty. I think this is going to be the beauty of the podcast. Only talking futures here. And we can bring on guests as well, right? Give us the rundown here. Who are we looking at in the NHL? You're going to have plenty of bets in the NBA. I love looking at futures in college basketball to make the Final Four and to win the entire thing. We'll have conferences as well. So this is going to be a podcast that is going to grow, and it's going to be a lot of fun as, you know, we try to win money betting futures. It's they're not always easy to do, man, but sometimes some big ones will pop, and that's a really good feeling.
Yep, love it. All right, so again, like, rate, review, subscribe. VSiN's Pod to the Futures, which I will mispronounce 1,000 times, but we'll get it down. We'll get it down totally. For Mitch Wyatt back in the studio recording myself, we appreciate it. We're going to be on every Tuesday, so we'll have these for you every single Tuesday. That'll be the time. We record them about 80. Yeah, once a week, 8 a.m. Pacific time is the general time in which we'll be recording, so put that in your calendar for the general time in which we'll be available. So for that, like, rate, review, subscribe. I'll say it 1,000 times, and we'll talk to you next week here on Pod to the Futures.